All right, today's edition of College Football Inquirer. We talk a whole bunch of Red River Shootout, Texas and Oklahoma. We talk about some surprise undefeated teams around the country. We play a game, Would You Eat It? Texas State Fair Edition. Thanks for listening.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
There is no painting of the produce, no misting of the vegetables, no glossing applied to the product, whatever. That's a real Whopper, and we're willing to fight.
Russ Dellinger.
Don't touch my salmon. Don't do anything crazy with it. Certainly don't effing deep fry it. So no, I'm going to pass.
And SI's Pat 40.
Big Burger has pulled one over on the government here. I'm unhappy. I'm unhappy here because we have seen it. It's true. We know that what they deliver is not what they advertise.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Oklahoma, Texas. State Fair of Texas, Dallas, Texas. Cotton Bowl, noon, big game. Biggest Red River rivalry game in a while. Don't call it the shootout. We used to be able to call it the shootout. Then all you guys started shooting each other. This is why we can't have nice things.
That's right. They went and took it literally down there.
Started. The weirdest one's always the shooting each other in the third quarter over who the better team is.
Yeah, at least wait until you know.
But this is a big one. OU arrives at 12th, ranked 12th in the country. Haven't been tested. Haven't really played anybody. Texas arrives at number 3. Having won by double digits at Alabama, have an excellent case to be number 1. Here is the question I have. This is a big game for Steve Sarkisian at Texas. This is a big game for Brent Venables at Oklahoma, the Big 12 championship. At least regular season may line up. These two could play again, I guess. But they never matched up twice, right?
Yeah, they did in 2018, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, could match up again. But this is where we're at. It's a conference championship. Nothing, talk about the playoff, hurting the regular season. Nothing does it like a conference championship game. Anyway, here's the game. Who needs it more? Whether it's because they got something going this year or long-term stability or setting themselves up with a recruit. This game always takes on more meaning than just who wins. Narratives, perspectives, momentum. It just carries so much in what goes into this game. Who needs this more, Pat?
Oklahoma needs it more for the first time in a while, in my opinion, with all things being equal. I mean, Oklahoma certainly would have liked to have won, could have used it last year, but they were without their starting quarterback and got absolutely annihilated. But Oklahoma has been the better program since Colt McCoy left Texas. They have been more nationally competitive. They've been in the playoff. But they have slipped and slipped back pretty far in the first year under Brent Venables. And Texas all of a sudden comes along, destroys them last year, sets the arc, year two of Sarkisian, winning season 8-5. And then they come into this season, beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa, move into the top 5, and all of a sudden Texas is starting to deliver for once on the hype for the first time in almost 15 years. Oklahoma, are you being left behind or not? You used to rule the Big 12. This is your last chance to win the Big 12. And where do you stand in this big rivalry game? I think Brent Venables really needs to prove that he's got this thing going in the right direction. Being 5-0 is nice, but as you pointed out, they haven't played anybody. And so this is a huge, huge proving ground, I think, for this Oklahoma team, for Brent Venables as the coach, and where they are going into the SEC next year.
Yeah, since Pat took Oklahoma, I'll just take Tech from Texas's standpoint, you know, and They did win big, like Pat said, last year. But, you know, they're a touchdown favorite in this game. The expectations for this season, year three under Sark, he's got an extra year on Brent Venables. This is his second year. This is Sark's third year. This is kind of the year and the season everybody circled with Quinn Ewers and them kind of rebuilding the lines. This is supposed to be it. And hard to see them winning a national championship or even making the playoff and if they drop this game. So to me, it you know, the pressure is on Texas as the favorite and as this being the season, supposed to be the season, you know. And just the way they've looked so far in the sky, I mean, Texas has got probably arguably one of the top three resumes, you know, and best wins of anybody in the country. And Oklahoma just really hasn't played anybody, you know. And it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds because I'm not sure what to make of the Sooners. I mean, we saw them struggle last year. I think they ended up with 6-6 or something like that. I'll be curious to see. So I just think there's enough expectations on Texas that this one's a little more pressure, I think, on the Longhorns to get it done.
I'm going to agree with Ross. I think that Texas, it's hard because we don't know what this Oklahoma team is. But watching Texas so far, this is a team that can win the national championship. And I know it's Texas 45-3 on Saturday. You can all make fun of me, but they went and won at Alabama. They've looked very good. They've got a great quarterback in Quinn Ewers. It is year three. They've built up. This is a real chance. And I don't know that Oklahoma has that real chance. It is also a real chance if you're Texas looking around and going, there isn't a couple of SEC buzzsaws that just seem impossible for us. If anything, we went to the number two team right now in the SEC and won by double digits at their place. It's not a year where you're going, I'm scared, you know, hey, maybe we just get in and then we lose. This is a wide open season in college football as of the first week of October. Nobody looks totally dominant. I guess Michigan looks pretty dominant, but they haven't played anybody. Everyone else, who knows? Oregon looks pretty dominant. We'll see. I think Texas can sit there and realistically say, hey, we have something here to win the national team. Maybe Oklahoma does too. I just haven't seen it yet. It's hard to make that statement. Oklahoma needs the victory for Venables to have that momentum going in the SEC, but their recruiting is really strong right now, as it generally is. They're recruiting at a high level, even better than Texas, which is recruiting at a high level. I guess they're both recruiting very well. Kind of depends what you want, how many you want, more bodies, you want less. So I don't think that it's like if Oklahoma loses this game, they lack that tailwind going into the SEC. I think they're still going to have it. Their schedule is not very strong. They're going to end up 10-2 or something like that at worst. So I still think they're going to have a lot going in. I just think if you're Texas, you're going to look back and go, hey, this is a year we can go get this. And it's a huge step, obviously, to go from non-contention. Were they 9-4 last year?
8-5.
8-5.
8-5 to national title. I get that. But it's just a different year. So that's my thought, is if I'm Texas, this has got the stakes of, I got to get in that playoff. And obviously this doesn't totally kill you. You just have to finish second and get another crack at OU. But winning this one would really set them up to where even they could probably lose the Big 12 championship game and make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this is the classic. It's big for both teams.
You know? That's why it's a big game.
Yeah, a lot on the line. And these chances for Texas don't come along nearly as often as people like to think. As we said, 2009, last time they played for a championship. So it is a big, big opportunity. But boy, if I'm Oklahoma, I'm like, man, we can't lose to them twice in a row. And do we really have any momentum with Brent Venables? If we're 10-2 and we've beaten nobody, does that really set us up for this? Here's my question for you guys. Is this still a Big 12 showcase, or is this now an SEC showcase? As Ross noted, and maybe even broke on the Sunday overreaction pod, that Greg Sankey is going to be there. Brett Yormark not believed to be in attendance. And this game has always been kind of the centerpiece of the schedule for the Big 12. It's in Dallas, the heart of the conference. Everybody pays attention to it. And now, all of a sudden, have we already kind of transitioned this into an SEC showcase?
Yeah. I Brett Yormark will not be there. I think he will see the teams. I think he's already been to one Oklahoma game, I believe, and he'll see them again, I believe, later this season. And he'll go to Texas, I think Texas Tech, and maybe another game. So he'll see him at some point, but he won't be there. But his colleague in the CFP room, Greg Sankey, will be there to watch his future teams play. It is fairly unusual, a sitting commissioner, you know, to go to a meeting of two teams from another conference, the SEC commissioner at a Big 12 conference game. It's kind of bizarre, but it speaks to the era of which we are in college sports and in college football, where it's just bizarre and weird things are happening. And Washington will soon play Rutgers in a conference game, and Arizona will soon play UCF in a conference game. So it's kind of bad crazy. And so Greg Sankey will be on hand for a Big 12 conference game. He's not going to stay to the end, I believe. I believe he's leaving for A&M Alabama. So he'll go to the Alabama A&M game and catch part of that. So I would guess by halftime that he'll be gone. I just wonder if he's going to get any deep fried Oreos at the state fair. I don't know that he's ever gone to a Texas Oklahoma game. So I'm sure the cameras will find him.
Well, he's smart enough to get out of there before the traffic, because if he waits the end, he ain't making that A&M game. This is absolutely an SEC game. Yeah. The entire Big 12 wants these two teams to, like, you know, get food poisoning for the rest of the season.
From the deep fried Oreos.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe someone's going to, there's a TCU fan running a Kearney. loosen the bolt on the Ferris wheel.
Golly, damn.
That may be a little rough. Just scare him a little.
Here goes the Ferris
wheel. This is
wheel.
Texas, Ross. This is Texas. Team.
This is we like the Costanza episode of Seinfeld. Don't
start
whole
with
team
me.
Just, the Major League mean. Baseball, does the whole team just crash a plane and everybody die? Godly, Dan.
They can't call it the Red River Shootout because the people started shooting each other.
Yeah. They shoot each other. There was the one dude that, like, literally removed the genitals of a fan from the other team. I think it was a Texas guy removed
what?
The Oklahoma guys. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
In a bar.
Oh,
in a bar
God.
With his hand.
Look that story up while I go into
this,
because that
I'm
is true.
I'm going to Google this.
That's, yeah, there's
I'm looking
some.
It up.
It's nasty out there. This okay, so here's the thing. This is us laughing at this the other day. The SEC's stranglehold on the national championship finally breaks, and it's won by Texas, who's coming into the SEC.
Oh, my God, this story.
Yeah,
oh,
watch this.
Yeah. Lord.
Okay.
Texas football fan nearly castrated in bar fight.
There's nearly.
Yeah.
Jesse, he didn't slice all the way through.
Horseshoes and hand grenades. That's close enough for me as a nearly.
Yeah,
right.
What does this story entail?
Okay. Touched off a bloody skirmish that left a Texas shirt-wearing fan nearly castrated and an Oklahoma fan facing aggravated assault charges that could put him in prison for up to 5 years. This was 2007.
Mm. Where were they?
They were in Oklahoma City.
At Henry Hudson's Pub.
Oh, that place. only 5 years for almost cutting a guy's right off? I mean, that's... What kind of weak-ass laws you got, Oklahoma?
It wasn't he didn't cut it. He tried to pull it.
Oh.
Beckett grabbed him in the crotch, pulled him to the ground, and wouldn't let go, even as bar patrons tried to break it up.
Oh,
when
my
the
God.
When were separated, Thomas looked down and realized the extent of his injuries.
I'm in pain reading this.
He didn't know at the time.
He could see both of his testicles on the outside of his body.
He was wearing a pair of white shorts. Oh, dear.
Regrettable fashion choice.
Such a great detail in the story.
Excellent work by the reporter. Yeah, good job.
Yeah, no, they got into it.
a great news gathering source.
60 stitches. Oh, yeah, God.
Wow. Yeah, so don't tell me that
they'll loosen bolts down there.
Yeah, they'll loosen bolts. They're literally ripping bolts right off or trying to.
Oh, man.
That is terrible. So do you go to that bar? Are they like, that's the corner where the...
Yeah, that's where it happened.
There should be a plaque there.
The casting,
you know, like the the metal
corner,
the big metal balls that hang off of in the South on the pickup trucks.
Yeah.
You know,
people put them
on the back. There's probably a plaque with the balls just hanging near the bar, inscribed. You know,
we need like somebody to visit Henry Hudson's and give us an on the ground report.
Check the Yelp reviews of Henry Hudson's. Yeah, it's like. $2 drafts if you sit in Castration Corner. No one wants to sit over there.
There might be something in that bar. Bars do that. There's a bar in Baton Rouge where two lawmakers got into a brawl, and my wife actually had to write the story about it. And we frequented that bar quite a bit. And she wrote the story about it, and they hung and framed her story in the bar where the fight happened. It's just so typical Louisiana.
All right. So at the beginning of the show, I had to do a little, if you listened, I had to do a little like preview on what this, and I go, I'm going to have to tape this after. I've yet to tape the little preview thing. Because I said to Sean, I have no idea what we're going to talk about. And certainly this was not on the rundown.
We did not have Castration Corner.
Castration Corner was not a phrase that was in the, okay. Back to your original question. This is a SEC game. The Big 12, it's horrified if there's a rematch in the Big 12 title game between these two teams. There's nothing to celebrate about these guys. And they got to be worried that Dallas is about to become an SEC market.
Yep.
Yep.
And SEC's been trying. Mike Slive had his eyes on that city particularly. Texas A&M, Arkansas game is played in Jerry World, right? They go over there and play. I forgot that when mentioning these neutral site games. They don't have the hatred of this. They have played, Alabama's played a number of like neutral site games. I think they have some kind of bowl line. They want to be in Dallas. Listen, Texas is still the base of the Big 12, but Texas A&M, Texas, and Oklahoma, probably the three most popular college football teams in the Metroplex.
Yeah.
I don't know if Oklahoma rates or not. It's not in state, close. But there's a lot of Okies down there in Dallas-Fort Worth. Those three are all in the SEC now. And so the interest of their fans in what Texas Tech is doing, what Kansas State's doing, what Baylor's doing is going to be weaker. It's also an ACC town now that SMU's in there. No. This is a huge thing you're claiming one of the biggest markets, one of the biggest football markets in the country. They love the recruiting turf.
They're moving SEC Media Days to Dallas next year, right?
Right. They want Dallas.
Yes.
They want Houston, but they want Dallas and Houston, and playing the biggest event, the biggest college football game in the state every year until Texas and A&M play now, right there in the middle of your state fair and having those SEC flags, right? They're going to have to send some carnies over from SEC country.
Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of those.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll have SEC food
booths.
Yeah,
it's not too
far
from from Shreveport over there. You send a couple LSU hardcore.
Yeah, those should have taste of the SEC during the, I'm not even kidding. I do all sorts of stuff during that Texas State Fair.
Sure.
We're going to get to would you eat it in a minute. It's not like it's hard to get something on the menu. If you see some of these items, but you could have taste of each SEC state. They're going to try to get those flat. They love nothing. The SEC likes is like SEC Media Day. There was like 10,000 flags and signs of SEC.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Just SEC everywhere you looked.
Yeah.
In case you forgot where you were
in Nashville. Yeah.
You're in a hotel ballroom at the SEC Media Days. There's no competition for your attention, and yet there's signs everywhere you look. SEC. Oh, okay. I forgot. I thought maybe for a second I was at the Mountain West. Yeah, this is Greg Sankey's going to be parading around, and then he's going to go down to to College Station, and they got Alabama, Texas A&M. I mean, they're controlling the state of Texas this week.
Yeah, and that's another big game. I mean, that game is for the lead, potentially the lead in a way in the Western Division, which is kind of up for grabs this year. But the winner of that game kind of gets control, it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one other quick element on this Red River game in Dallas.
Okay.
So it has always been, as I said earlier, kind of the centerpiece game of the Big 12 schedule in the Big 12 season. Doesn't necessarily always decide who wins, but it's played a big, big impact, and it is kind of the cultural epicenter game. Will it just be another game in the SEC? You got the cocktail party, you got the Egg Bowl, you got the Iron Bowl, you got Alabama-Tennessee, you got a lot of other games. Where will it still resonate as much as an SEC game?
Hmm. I think so. But they both have to be good.
Yeah.
Right. It will resonate in that area because it's still going to matter who wins that game. And again, the location matters, all of that. But yeah, I mean, we see rivalries. Tennessee, Florida used to be the biggest thing going, right? Now it's not. Alabama, LSU has been game of the century a bunch of times this century. And then it's, it's probably not going to be this year. So yeah, it can come and go. I also, like, if you're a Texas fan, do you want to beat Oklahoma more or you want to beat A&M more?
Ooh.
Boy.
I mean,
I think A&M is must win. Oklahoma, we sure like to win. A&M is must win.
Yeah. A&M, there's an expectation to beat them every year kind of thing. The Oklahoma game seems a little more evenly matched, I guess, in the minds of fans.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you know, that whole feud between A&M and Texas is what drove A&M to the SEC to begin with. So
It's amazing you could hate an opponent more than the opponent that tried to rip your
your dude's,
some fans
back off.
Oh, yeah, right off there in a bar up in OKC. I mean, that's an affront to all of us in burnt orange. That's what I would think. But still, ain't as annoying as an Aggie.
That's right. They're Giggum and their fake army and their white cheerleader outfits.
All right. There we go. SEC. All right, we're going to play Would You Eat It? State Fair of Texas Edition, our annual game. Right after
great
this.
Game.
I did want, it was one of our better games, I do believe. We don't have Sully anymore. Sean's a little bit more. We had Sully, the producer, would eat anything.
Anything.
I think I made up something once, like a deep fried boot or something. Like deep fried. Yeah, I'll take it. Got some ranch. No problem. He would eat anything.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I do want to get to this. I want to talk about some of the perhaps unexpected, undefeated teams. That don't always get the attention they deserve. And our thoughts on whether they can continue, what's going on, how they got there, how excited their fans should be. I want to start with Maryland, 5-0. They have looked impressive. Loxley's built up that program. They got it going pretty good. Big game this weekend, though, Ohio State. So huge focal point for them. But thoughts on the Terps, Pat?
Boy, they're playing very well. Not just 5-0, but unchallenged 5-0 so far. Schedule has not been difficult, but they've answered all challenges. It looks like it's probably Loxley's best team. They are better defensively. They can run the football. It's not just all Talia Tongafailoa, but boy, has he been good. He was awesome in blowing up Indiana. He was my small sample Heisman winner on Sunday. And I think they can go in and at least give Ohio State a game. I would expect that to be competitive for the long haul. So I like what Maryland's doing. I don't see them winning in the horseshoe, but I see them covering an 18.5-point spread.
They haven't had the toughest schedule, but some of these games, like at Michigan State, even Indiana, Even Virginia, these are games that, you know, in the past, Maryland has struggled to win or struggled to at least, you know, distance themselves. And they've done that, as Pat mentioned, in every game. I mean, they're winning by, I mean, the closest game they played, I think, was against Charlotte. They won 38-20. So our average margin of victory right now is 20 points, 20, 25 points. So they've been blowing out people Yeah, Talia has played really well. 13 TDs, 3 interceptions. He's averaging right at 300, I think 295, 300 yards a game. So it's been, yeah, it's been impressive. You know, Locks, when he moved from move over from Alabama, you know, I think there was an excitement up here, and you know, being in DC, even though Maryland, from where I live in the middle of the city of DC, is not the easiest to get to, it's still like 35, 40 minutes to get to Maryland. And obviously DC is not necessarily a college town, I wouldn't say. But I remember when he took the job up here, I had moved here that same year basically, and there was like a buzz of like having, you know, the DC guy back, you know, the native son back. I mean, he grew up here in the city. He worked at Maryland, I think, multiple stints. And there was a sense that he could kind of like lock down the DMV. And man, he's landed some big recruits, and you know, he's built it up. And man, you know, obviously they want to win in the horseshoe, but even if they stay competitive, right, it would feel kind of like a victory.
Miami Hurricanes, talked about them early in the season, obviously very, very impressive victory over A&M. Haven't played pretty much anyone else. To get Georgia Tech this weekend. Their schedule will ramp up later in the year, but your thoughts on where Mario Cristobal has this team in year two? Pat, we'll go back to Pat.
Sure. Yeah, I think we're going to end up watching a lot of Miami. October 14th, North Carolina, October 21st, Clemson, and then Florida State on 11-11 could be a huge one. But boy, I really like what they've done. I think Cristobal made two great coordinator moves, bringing in Shannon Dawson on offense and Lance Guidry on defense. Obviously, Tyler Van Dyke looks like he did at the beginning of his college career, playing under Dawson. I mean, he's playing fantastic at quarterback. And then the defense, just much more buttoned up, giving up 12.5 points per game. They gave up 33 to A&M, but the offense was so good it didn't matter because they were just shredding them. And then that's the only team that's scored more than 7 so far against them. Georgia Tech should be a walkover this year, but I like them a lot. But that's going to be kind of a sneaky good October 14th game if it's undefeated North Carolina and undefeated Miami.
Yeah, another like kind of similar to Locks, right? Like another native son, right? Miami native, Mario Cristobal comes back and locks down South Florida recruiting wise. And you know, we've made mention of it a lot on the pod the last couple of years, but you know, they've got a NIL engine down there, right? That's motoring pretty well. And you know, it's an incredible city. And,
didn't it get some like legal trouble?
Yeah, there's a little bit of issues with the main booster. He's got some problems. Yeah, I mean, it's Miami. It's a typical Miami story, Dan. You know, yeah, John Ruiz is having some issues with his Life Wallet company. I believe they're not doing super well financially. But the university, I think, in a wise move, kind of is switching over all their NIL from John Ruiz from underneath John Ruiz's umbrella into an actual like collective that is independent, I think, of Ruiz. So they're going to be fine, I believe so. And you know, they're attracting talent, and they kept, you know, a huge thing in the offseason obviously was keeping Tyler Van Dyke at quarterback. We've made mention of it. I think it's pretty public knowledge now that Alabama was trying to get him, and they kept him. You know, whether that's through NIL or other things, I don't know, but they kept him, you know. And Xavier Restrepo, who receiver who missed a lot of time last year with injury, is just tearing it up. You know, I mean, he's had a couple of incredible games, and he's just really hard to cover. So they're, you know, I'm kind of buying into them, but like Pat said, they've got a rough stretch coming here. They've got, you know, 3 out of the next 5 weeks. They've got faced some pretty good opponents, you know, but the coordinator hires last year and Mario Cristobal's first season just didn't work. You know, Kevin Steele, Josh Gattis, it just, for whatever reason, it did not work. And they made changes and they hired two guys who, Lance Guidry on defense and Shannon on offense, who seemed to have made a world of difference and probably gelled a little better with the head coach.
Louisville Cardinal, 5-0, haven't beaten anybody of particular note. Georgia Tech, Murray State, Indiana, BC, and NC State, but those ACC games are on the road. Not BC, NC State and Tech were. Indiana was neutral site, 3-0 in the ACC for the first time ever, maybe. Jack Plummer is not Lamar Jackson, but he is winning games and getting it done. Jeff Brohm is back. This is what he came back for. Pat, you got a front row seat on this. How about those Cardinals?
And I will be at the Notre Dame game Saturday. Looking forward to seeing that.
They get Notre Dame this weekend, too.
Yeah. The impressive things there, like Brohm's ability to make some good, astute portal additions, and then just kind of roll out that same explosive offense he had at Purdue. They are second nationally in scrimmage plays of 30 yards or more, and they are tied for first in scrimmage plays of 40 yards or more. So they are a big play offense. Plummer, not a superstar quarterback, but he knows what Brohm wants and knows how to do it. Jamari Thrash, receiver transfer from Georgia State, has been spectacular. Big play, big play, big play, big play. Jawar Jordan, running back who was left over, has been excellent. And Brohm, they got through spring practice. Like, okay, we have to get our quarterback. We got Plummer. We got some other pieces. They get through spring practice. They're like, our offensive line isn't too good. So they go out and add some key pieces for the portal heading out of spring ball. And now all of a sudden they're much better in that position. I don't know whether they have enough to basically to stop Notre Dame. We'll see on the defensive side of this, but they are much better than anticipated and better than they have been since Lamar Jackson was the QB.
I know nothing about Louisville.
Good.
I got a lot to
learn. That's good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah,
don't, great. Don't fake it.
Bringing a lot to the pod here.
We talked a lot about Kentucky last time, so maybe, do you know anything about Kentucky? Quicker with Kentucky. They are 5-0. They get Georgia. They're at Georgia this weekend. Maybe a little bit of surprise. I think the most interesting to me with Kentucky is every year it's like Mark Stoops, will you leave? And every year he just sort of cruises along. He's got a contract to like 2030, making $9 million a year, some huge amount of money. Unless he gets absolutely housed this weekend, I can't imagine like what is it that makes him want to leave Kentucky. I guess maybe he can't win a national title. Maybe you wait and see how this playoff works.
Yeah, right.
You know, at Kentucky, it's hard to make a 4-team playoff at Kentucky. Might not be as hard to make a 12. Well, it won't be, but can you make it?
Right. No, stands to reason. And you know, he's done a phenomenal job there. And I think I said Sunday, I mean, they've just won a variety of ways. They find ways to win this team. They got the Vanderbilt transfer, Ray Davis, excellent running back, NC State transfer, Devin Leary at quarterback. And they are going to give Georgia a game. The way Georgia's been playing, if Georgia doesn't dramatically step up its level of play, that's going to be a 60-minute tussle that could go down to the wire.
Yeah, I think so too. In fact, I kind of, if the game was in Lexington, you know, I'd have a real inclination to pick the Kentucky to win. I think it's harder, obviously, in Athens on the road, but the way Kentucky plays in kind of the a little bit old school, right? I mean, Ray Davis, has been incredible. You know, obviously the 280 performance against Florida, he makes incredible plays, and they kind of lean on him, you know, to do it in a solid defense, which they've had, you know, since Stoops has been there. You know, he's a defensive guy, and they allowed 28 points to Vanderbilt, kind of in a blowout, but otherwise, you know, they're giving up only a couple touchdowns a game. So this has the makings of kind of a similar game to the Auburn game, Auburn and Georgia, like just this kind of maybe ugly offensive game, defensive battle coming down to the last play.
Missouri, 5-0, ranked 21. They host LSU this weekend. I've mentioned Brady Cook 11 touchdowns, zero interceptions. I think he has the SEC record for most pass completions or pass attempts without an interception. What are they doing out there with the Tigers? Obviously a big test this weekend, but they could really send LSU reeling, Pat.
Yeah, big opportunity for them. This is certainly Eli Drinkwitz's best team, but boy, you look at them on paper and you're like, what exactly is it they're really good at? Yeah. And there's not a lot other than not throwing the ball to the other team. They got a great wide receiver, Luther Burden III. And this was this was NIL at work. And talking about what we've been talking about on this podcast for years, leveling the playing field. Luther Burden comes to Missouri. He's from St. Louis. Could have gone wherever he wanted. He was the number one receiver in the country, 2022. They rolled out the package for him. He was doing potato chip endorsements right away. And last year's freshman year, he was okay, maybe a little disappointing. This year, oh, it's on. He's blowing up. He's second in the country in I think receiving yards per game, first in total yards, has four straight 100-yard receiving games. He's a good punt returner. He was big in their win against Kansas State. And this is the kind of thing that should help level the playing field. I don't know how Missouri slows down Jaden Daniels in the LSU passing game and Daniels on the run too. So that's a tough matchup for him. But I really, Missouri is one of those poster child programs for what you can do with NIL to compete with other programs.
Yeah. This of all the ones we've talked about, all the undefeated teams, I think this has been the biggest surprise. And it's not like the first five games were, you know, this huge gauntlet, but they did beat Kansas State in a big victory on the 61-yard field goal. They survived a scare with Memphis as well. And they beat South Dakota State, Middle Tennessee, and most recently Vanderbilt. But so this hasn't been some gauntlet, but it's been impressive. And it's been, you know, again, the biggest surprise. I think entering the year, you know, there's a lot of folks that probably thought Eli Drinkwitz wouldn't make it through the season, that he was on the hot seat kind of, and that there would be a change there if and when they didn't do enough this year. So this has been the biggest surprise. But boy, it gets tough sledding starting with this weekend for the Tigers. We'll know a lot really quickly. Get LSU, have to travel to Kentucky, and then get South Carolina, then Georgia. I mean, in Tennessee. I mean, it gets really, really hard. But they've been impressive. Brady Cook, I think they're like top 20 in passing yards a game. So offensively, they've been tearing it up. But like Pat said, I think, you know, the biggest concern for them probably is on defense, and is on slowing Jaden Daniels in a LSU offense that doesn't have problems scoring. This could be a, I don't know what the over under of this thing is, but this could be a shootout.
It's 64.5. Pat, you're right. Luther Burden, I don't know who's covering him on LSU. This kid is incredible. No, he's a top five national recruit from the St. Louis area, and NIL and Missouri, they're doing exactly what you need to do. Prioritize your local guys and focus on them, and it peels off one or two. They already got Williams Narwanery, who is the top edge rusher in the country, who's near the Kansas City area. He's committed for next year. And Ryan Wingo is a top 10 national recruit and a wide receiver from St. Louis, probably the second-ranked receiver in the country, five-star. Texas wanted him at the Texas-Oklahoma game. Texas A&M wanted him at the Alabama game. He's going out to Columbia this weekend for a recruit. So they're trying the same thing. So NIL allows a school like Missouri to potentially sign three top 10 recruits in a two-year period. And it's not only do they make them better, but it makes somebody else a little weaker.
Right.
And that's the margins when you factor that out with all these schools. That's why NIL is playing a role in a little more parity. Because imagine next year, you got two top five receivers at Missouri, right? If that happens, we'll see what Ryan Wingo does. He can go wherever he wants. Obviously, but like, it's a thing.
Yeah. The eternal the dream and the frustration eternally at Missouri has been, we are the only FBS school in the state. If we just control Kansas City and St. Louis, we can do it. We can compete with everybody. They have not been able to control those cities well enough. You get Nebraska coming in to Kansas City. You get Texas coming in. You can get a lot of Big Ten schools and SEC schools in St. Louis. Now, with NIL, you maybe have a chance to actually do what Missouri has talked about for, I don't know, 100 years.
Yeah, in this the NIL thing at Missouri, it was been a pretty big storyline this summer with obviously their state law, you know, changing to allow for in-state, you know, players to get NIL money and
upon signing with an in-state school,
so there's a huge incentive there to get cash quickly by signing with the Tigers. And you know, it's something that I think, just from talking to people at Mizzou, they hope to get two recruiting classes out of it, you know, before everybody else does it, or before there's other massive rule changes. Because as somebody mentioned to me, Missouri just wrote the law for all the other states, you know, to do the same. I'm assuming at some point that may happen. A lot of states are in session, their legislative session in the winter, spring. So we'll see what happens there. But they were hoping to get two recruiting classes out of it. Luther Burden. Yeah, I'm just looking at, you guys were talking about Luther Burden. I'm just scanning through the numbers and holy cow. Like,
he's ridiculous.
140 yards last game, 177, 114, 117, at least seven catches each game. You know, LSU's weak point, as we talked about on Sunday, is defensive backfield. So
there are 4 or 5 star recruits this year in Missouri. Missouri's got Juanere, who we mentioned earlier. They're in on Ryan Wingo, obviously. After that, it's Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, and even UNLV coming in.
Mm.
So, you know, everybody recruits St. Louis. Everyone, they've had,
yeah.
There's no respect. Not that Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama, and those ones, they'll go wherever they want. But there's never been any respect that you can't get a great player out of Missouri.
100%.
And so they go in thinking this is easy. You know, you got a dogfight trying to go into Georgia and get a kid that Georgia wants. Going to Ohio, they haven't had that. Maybe this is what starts it. We'll see. But just having a little bit of talent there. All right, there are others undefeated. So we'll get to them. Some we've talked about. No disrespect, UNC or Washington State or anything like that. But we got to play. Would you eat it?
Yes,
and we'll talk more games later. But you know, we have priorities here.
Yeah, I mean, we have to play Would You Eat It? Yeah.
Would You Eat It?
Are you crazy? Of course.
Yes, this is the Texas State Fair. We only do the new items. I believe there are 23 new items. We're not going to go through all of them. Some of them are pretty obvious that we'd take, I don't know, a brisket nacho. Yeah, of course, right? These are some of the more unusual ones that we would take. Deep-fried honey butter brisket swirl.
Oh, my God.
In the spirit of a Little Debbie pecan spin wheel, this is from the official Texas State Fair website, and homemade cinnamon rolls, the deep-fried honey butter brisket swirl are a delightful treat with a Texas twist. So they basically roll the swirl up, and in the swirl includes 16-hour slow-smoke chopped brisket. So you've got to have that flavor of the 16 hours. If it was only 15 hours, it wouldn't be enough with all that sugar on it. It's then deep fried, glazed in secret honey butter. These crisp, sweet, fluffy swirls are sure to put a smile on your face. Would they put a smile on your face, Ross? Would you or will you have a deep fried honey butter brisket swirl this weekend?
Wait, so what's the what's the swirl?
It's like a Cinnabon.
Okay.
Like a cinnamon roll.
Okay.
With brisket, so it's like stuffed dough in by the
brisket
cinnamon
inside, yeah. and then they roll it in.
Deep fry it. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds pretty damn good, I have to say. It's sweet and smoky, maybe a little crispy. This sounds wonderful. I mean, I'm going, so maybe I'll get this.
If you find it.
You should. See, that's it. Again, Ross's predecessor is just too much of an acai bowl guy. He wasn't good playing this game. Ross is a little more participatory.
Yeah, you're right.
Here.
Right.
I'll try anything. Maybe not eat the whole thing.
We'd be like bottled Icelandic water.
I would eat it for sure. I to me, it sounds like it might be better with ham than with brisket. Yeah. But you know,
I like my savory on, and I'm not sure. It's not going to be my first choice.
No.
Yeah, I don't know, but we'll see. All right, deep fried sushi bomb.
Ooh.
Oh no! This already sounds bad.
The big Texas twist on a sushi bake. Never heard it called a bake. With big flavor to match, sushi rice is generally topped with imitation crab meat. They don't even pretending. And perfectly seasoned salmon for a quick bake. The sushi bake is then rolled in panko breadcrumbs and deep fried until golden brown, served with a side of seaweed and yum yum dipping sauce. Pat?
So it's kind of like Lone Star tempura or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, but with salmon.
So I just salmon. No, like sushi's one of those things you can't really mess with. It's either you do it right or it's way wrong. And this sounds like it could go way wrong to me. So I'm out. I'm out on the sushi bomb bake, whatever.
One of my favorite things to eat is just raw salmon, sushi, sashimi, nigiri. Don't touch my salmon. Don't do anything crazy with it. Certainly don't effing deep fry it. So no, I'm going to pass on eating raw / baked salmon rolled in seaweed and rice and then dropped in a fryer in the middle of Dallas.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's raw anymore if it's been cooked in a deep fryer.
Yeah.
I mean,
right? Yeah.
I there's too many other options. I just, that's not where I'm, I'm not wasting my time on that one. This one's getting, what do they call it? I don't know what they call it, but they merge them with a fusion.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
The Bao Bun Taco Trio. A fried chicken taco, pork belly, burnt end, pork belly, and then a burnt end one in a Bao Bun with chopped brisket. Mm. So instead of a taco, like a tortilla, Bao Bun.
I don't even know what a bao bun is.
It's like a bao bun. It's like the soft. It's the white, it's
Asian like soft.
It's like a really doughy kind of. It's really good. This sounds
excellent. It's just not a taco. It does have meat in it. It's just, I mean, they're all kind of the same thing, right? Like an empanada is a burrito. You know.
I'm in on that.
Yeah,
I'm definitely in on that. Anything that says both pork belly and burnt end, I am in on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
I'd give it a shot.
This is the first one that I would try.
Ooh, there first we go.
One. Okay.
Sean's in.
How about this one, Sean? We'll start with you. The Fruity Pebble Pickle.
Oh, a delicious. Get the hell out of here.
Well,
wait,
I want to hear the explanation.
I don't need to know it. I don't need to hear the rest of it.
I got to tell you about it. A delicious whole dill pickle wrapped in every kid's favorite fun snack, a fruit roll-up, and fruit by foot, then drizzled in sugar syrup and coated in one of the most popular cereals in the world, Fruity Pebbles. It's then drizzled again with a strawberry snow cone syrup.
Oh yeah, because you need two drizzles of something, sure.
It's unholy.
Terrible. What's that?
It's unholy. You can't do that to a pickle.
A poor pickle. I know. Pickles are great by themselves.
Pickle's just minding its own business and it just gets. I got problems with the fruit roll ups. That's
brutal. That turned me off immediately too. I'm not a fruit roll up fan at all, and they stick to your teeth and all that.
That's the thing. Like the logistics of eating this thing.
Yeah,
I mean, it's going to end up like the Fruity Pebbles are going to be falling off all over the place. You're going to immediately get stuff on your hands. Mm. Yeah. No, that I'm out on that. I'm with Sean. Don't mess with a good pickle like that.
Okay. Well, if you need to wash it down, how about this one? This is the fried fireball shot.
Woo!
A fluffy, airy, melt-in-your-mouth sweetness of angel food cake meets the red-hot and fiery cinnamon flavor of Fireball cinnamon malt liquor. So it's not that the real Fireball. Are they not allowed to do it?
It's the malt liquor.
Man, we did this lawsuit.
Yeah.
Fireball. Oh, yeah. They sneak them. It's malt liquor flavored like Fireball. It's not actual Fireball whiskey. Okay. So after deep frying to a perfect golden brown, I guess that's the angel food cake. Fireball cinnamon is poured over the top and into a shot glass. You no longer have to choose between the angel or the devil on your shoulder when you shoot back the fried fireball shot.
Nice marketing there. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. They did a good job with that. Because, I mean, I'm often wandering around also thinking, should I have some angel food cake or should I have a shot
of that
imitation?
That's right. That's right.
Especially at 9 a.m. At the Texas State Fair. Yeah.
Let's see what you got, Greg Sankey. Let's see, dear leader. Step up and get the SEC into this.
There you go.
Don't mess with Texas. Anyone doing this thing?
Sure. Absolutely. If I'm gonna go into that game, first of all, here let's paint the scenario. There's going to be 100,000 people at the game or 90,000, whatever seats at the Cotton Bowl. 80,000 of them are going to be hungover from Friday night, which is just a rager in Dallas. I mean, it's one of the great party nights anywhere in America. So they're going to be hair of the dogging as best they can at the state fair to get ready and get into that game. And I think this is a good way to do it. Take the fireball shot, even if it's fake fireball, and go with it.
So it's angel food cake, deep fried, and then basically
put in a
this
shot. It's almost like a in a Bloody Mary, you know, they'll put like like a celery or a pickle or whatever. It's kind of like that. That's what it looks like in the picture.
I'd give it a go. And like Pat said, you know, at 9 a.m., 10 a.m. Need a little hair of the dog.
Well, there you go. That is this year's edition of Would You Eat It? Mixed bag. See, we don't just take everything.
No.
Pretty good.
You said Sully would literally eat anything. Yeah. You know.
Pete would not eat anything, and then it was just left to Pat and I. The game's gotten better. No offense, guys. Yeah. Ole Miss stormed the field the other day when they beat LSU. There was some great videos. There was a security guard who couldn't block. He looked like the New York Giants offensive
hilarious.
Line.
That was
the only person he decked.
He just
some
threw
girl
a forearm
from,
at people.
He decked some girl from like Delta Kappa or something.
Yeah,
that was it.
She got clothes hanged.
Yeah. He looked like Daniel Jones back there trying to avoid the hit. Go ahead.
No, you had no lateral movement in terms of
he wasn't. Speed and quickness drill. Anyway.
No, he didn't. He was a little too much up top to have any lateral side to side.
Ole Miss tries to get security out there to stop the fans from storming, and this is what we get. Like one decked sophomore from... Like that's it. Everyone else gets guys jumping off the upright
crossbar,
crossbar.
Yeah, dude tried to do a flip and landed on his ass.
Yeah,
some dude got
he climbed the whole. He climbed halfway up the crossbar, then slid back down, and then did the flip off of it and landed right on his butt, and then was I think detained.
Yeah, not exactly. I'd love to see like if Auburn did it and then like SUNY Lee got up there and then just did like a triple layout and everyone just goes, all right, that was so awesome. We're not finding you. We're not going to find you for that. Instead, it's a drunken.
I wonder how LSU is going to use that $100,000 because, you know,
well, that's
obviously
it. They get fined.
NIL for a DB.
Get a defensive back. Ole Miss has to pay a $100,000 fine. But instead of it going to the SEC in a plot twist that's kind of out of a Seinfeld episode, LSU gets the money. Ole Miss has to pay LSU $100,000 for charging the field against LSU. In the ACC, this would be called competition bonus, right? Because you're now going to charge them against the good teams. So if you owe LSU, if you're Ole Miss and you owe $100,000 to LSU, dump truck full of pennies dropped off in Baton Rouge. Is that how you do it?
Just dump it right across the state line. Whatever's right across there, just dump Kent it Woods. And say, pick it up yourself.
Bogalusa. Yeah. Drop Bogalusa. It off in Bogalusa.
There we go.
Come get your money.
We got a pile of pennies
some,
over.
Hey, it won't be the first rolls. Time that an SEC team dropped a bag in Bogalusa.
Here we go.
$100,000. Buy yourself a secondary LSU. How's that, Brian Kelly? Good God, you guys suck. We just beat you. And anyway, 100 G's. It only works on SEC teams. Missouri charged against Kansas State and they just had to give $100,000 to the SEC Postgraduate Scholarship Fund, which is terribly boring. I want a massive, like one of those golf championship or like the lottery winner. And like, I want Brian Kelly.
Yeah
I want, I want Lane handing it to Brian Kelly. I want the mascots, the whole thing.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah.
We got to turn this into something. Fine bomb show or something.
Standing in between them, you know.
Yeah, yeah, everyone's smiling. Hey, don't do it again. Like, we're gonna do it again. We're gonna do it again. I got one guy out there guarding the entire end zone at Vaught Hemingway Stadium. How am I? Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss can't be like we had great security. No, I mean, you didn't.
No,
you really didn't. You couldn't stop anybody except that one girl. The one girl. Anyway, that's so we got that going on. All right, we'll talk a lot more football on the Race for the Case show. There's a lot of great games this weekend. But this was an ongoing saga we are late to get to, and it's very important. We've been covering this litigation, and we have a verdict. Now, the situation was settled in New York here. McDonald's and Wendy's have defeated a lawsuit accusing them of deceiving hungry diners by exaggerating the size of their burgers, okay? At issue was that the go into a McDonald's or a Wendy's and the picture of the burger in the signage is this, you know, just massive overflowing, you know, Whopper or whatever they got, Baconator or whatever they got at Wendy's. And then when you get your thing, it just, that ain't it. And I think we've all experienced this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, we have.
Yeah.
However, U.S. District Judge Hector Gonzalez in Brooklyn found no proof that the fast food chains delivered smaller burgers than advertiser, or that plaintiff Justin Chiamini, who was really fighting the fight for all of us, man of the people, ever seen ads for the Wendy's Big Mac or Wendy's bourbon bacon cheeseburger he bought. How can you not prove you've seen? Everyone's seen the ads. Yeah. Chiamini had alleged that the ads depicted undercooked beef patties because meat shrink 25% when cooked. The complaint had quoted a food stylist that she worked for McDonald's and Wendy's and preferred undercooked patties because the fully cooked burgers looked less appetizing. And also Wendy's inflated the amount of topping it uses. But basically, Gonzalez said the burger chain, it was the use of visual appealing images to foster positive associations with their products is not illegal. So thoughts on that, Pat? We have a verdict.
Big Burger has pulled one over on the government here. I'm unhappy. I'm unhappy here because we have seen it. It's true. We know that what they deliver is not what they advertise. Where was I? I was going to the airport in Denver and stopped at McDonald's just to grab something because I was starving and I'm not going to eat for another 4 hours, blah, 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 blah. And I got, you know, just a dispiriting little cheeseburger. Looks nothing like what they put on the menu when they're trying to get you to buy it. And, we've been badly done to, and apparently the government doesn't care. Thanks a whole bunch, Hector Gonzalez.
Is this how the American justice system is spending the time? Is this is what we're doing? We could be actually handling real cases. And
I think
here
this
we
is a
go,
real case. You know. They sell billions. They say they got billions of every day in every town in this country. Someone's getting potentially defrauded by the Big Mac.
That's right.
What? I mean, this is the
we
real
need
15% stuff.
More beef.
This is the
we
real
do.
Stuff. This is affects
we
people.
Do.
Yeah, they have all sorts of cases. I'm like, I don't know. Don't care. Like, this is it. Yeah. If you make McDonald's make that Big Mac bigger, that's going to affect a lot of people.
It is. You open up that drive-thru bag and you look at it like, oh, man, come on.
Well, there are times I'm a chicken sandwich guy. And there are times I'll go through one of these drive-thrus and get my chicken sandwich and open it up and see the piece of chicken in between the two buns. And it's, you know, about the size of a silver dollar.
That's
more of
a
pigeon breast than a
chicken
breast.
Hector Gonzalez says, take it and enjoy your chicken. Okay, so during, I've had a lot of anonymous sources in my career in journalism, whistleblowers, you know, people have told me things I can never repeat or even acknowledge I know them. At no point did I ever think I would have an inside source at Burger King.
Uh-oh.
Over this.
Uh-oh.
Lo and behold, we'll here
him,
we are.
We'll call him Deep Hamburglar. No, was that McDonald's? What's the Burger King?
Yeah,
the King.
You're gonna
Deep King.
Yeah,
Deep King.
Yep, Deep King.
Deep King. You know who you are, Deep King. Irate over this lawsuit says Burger King does nothing wrong. So take it as you will. It's a biased source, but it's still a source. Quote: think of the Whopper as the same as some girl or guy having their very best Instagram photo shoot, best angles, perfect lighting, filters beyond belief. Maybe some brands have fake buns. Implants, if you will, but not DK. I can confirm we use real authentic. This is my life. There is no painting of the produce, no misting of the vegetables, no glossing applied to the product, whatever. That's a real Whopper, and we're willing to fight.
My God. This is real? This came from a human? Deep King?
Yes. Good person, too.
Deep King, no misting of the vegetables. I like
him. Is he a friend of the pod?
BK is going to win their lawsuit, too. They're getting sued separately. They weren't in this one.
Oh. Deep King, a friend of the pod?
Yes, because Deep King listens to the pod.
Okay.
And works at Burger King, high up at Burger King. And okay. The pod reaches the highest levels of business and industry in this
businesses,
country.
Governments, clergy, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I've got like 20 messages. Yeah. It's a beautiful burger. Just tell Pat and Ross if they're so upset, I'll get them free BK so they'll stop complaining.
Well,
yep.
We can be bought.
Oh, wait, you got another part. Just like that IG photo shoot, and maybe the angles and positioning of the gold standard product provide an accentuated image. And people need to stop bitching about that, especially 40. You got called out in here.
I did.
He also calls the gold standard Whopper. This is apparent. I don't know if this is an industry inside term or whatever. Every gold standard Whopper requires the proper amount of mayo by scoop/ounce, lettuce, handful/ounce, tomatoes, 2 full ripe slices, pickles, 4 spread evenly, onions, 3 rings, flame broiled patty, sesame seed bun, inspect to ensure proper seed amount and toasting of bun.
Damn it.
I mean, that all sounds good in the boardroom. Do we need to go back and like assess the assembly line in Detroit on a Friday night there and see if they're following that to the letter?
Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's 40 called out by Deep King.
I can be bought. And I do like his Instagram line. I will say that because there's more false advertising on Instagram than anywhere on earth.
Yeah. So, well, BK and Taco Bell. I think are in a different suit, also in Brooklyn. Okay. Or BK's in a different... No, BK's getting sued in Miami. Taco Bell is in Brooklyn about the crunch wrap. So whatever. We're this is where we're at. Big burger, as you said.
Is this what the government was shutting down over? What
I think it was.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, we soon might not have a Speaker of the House, so that bodes well for the impending NIL legislation. I'm sure.
What do they think on these issues that really matter?
Well, yeah, let's get McCarthy or Matt Gaetz is overthrowing him. What do they hear?
I believe so.
What do they think about Big Burger versus America?
How's the NIL going? How's the NIL legislation going? We don't even have a government. Yeah. We got rogue justices siding with McDonald's.
Yeah, come on.
Probably got Grimace out there dropping campaign bags. It's all out of control. Totally out of control. All right. We'll be back later in the week. Talk more football. Pick the games. Great week ahead. Little bit of a ragged show, but that's how we do it here. That's how we do it. Appreciate everybody listening, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about us, and talk to you later.